Welcome to Reading Deadly Troubadours, the weekly podcast where I, Brent Thomas, read my novel, Deadly Troubadours. Let's begin, shall we?
Chapter 5, Coal Town, The Quest, Part 2. The gray morning light did not give a better view of Coal Town. The air felt thin and shallow. Rough grass grew in splotches and seemed to be losing a war of attrition to mud and rock. The most abundant plant life was something between moss and mold, but it grew on everything. In addition to being covered in the lichen-like growth, most of the buildings in town, from houses to the town office and even the Black Canary, were all simple, squat structures. While evidence of paint still flaked off from between the moss on a few of the buildings, most of them had long since abandoned such adornment and embraced the simple, back-to-nature look. The four guildmates strongly suspected that this natural, untreated wood and mold motif had been determined either by the high price of paints and cleansers, or because first stripping and then painting a building would be too much of a pain in the ass. Regardless of the reasons, the ugly buildings helped set the proper tone of bleak that made up the town's atmosphere. Much of the bleakness lay in the history of the town and what could have been. When that black rock that gave both the mountain and the town their names was discovered, a rush to the town had occurred. Not only was the coal available to be mined in abundance, but tunnels already wormed their way through the mountain. Rather than pausing to consider the mystery of what burrowed such tunnels, the question of why the tunnels were there was dismissed as good fortune by those eagerly searching for profit. And there was much profit to be had, primarily by those with the wealth to commission others to do their digging for them. The so-called masters of the mines flourished and were eager to set up bars, brothels, gambling dens, and other pastimes designed to mine the pockets of the diggers, giving the masters the main lines of revenue. Then came the dragons, a mighty red and a fearsome black, took up residence in the very peak of Coal Mountain for some unknown purpose. Some of the diggers left that very day. Others stayed, attracted to the higher wage now paid by the masters, who had gone to considerable expense to set up this town and didn't want to see it abandoned due to the presence of two overgrown lizards. Additionally, the higher wages usually resulted in more being spent on booze, broads, and cards. The money spent on such pleasures also went to the masters. In fact, the workers began to spend more than ever before. The result of increased salary to the workers actually turned out to promote greater loss. Once a week, the red would cast its shadow over the town as it flew north, returning later that same day. Outside of that, little was known of the dragons. There were the occasional sounds, snarls, growls, and the like, but not much else. No one had seen the black since its initial arrival. No one in the town knew much about dragons other than what was said in children's stories, and none suspected they were breeding until after the first egg hatched. The tunnels that wormed through the mountain were much too large for a full-grown dragon, but they were more than large enough for an adolescent dragon to use, let alone an infant dragon. The first few disappearances were written away as accidents. Even experienced diggers could fall down a shaft, and it was always possible, if not exactly likely, to get lost in the entwining tunnels. It wasn't until a badly burned and bleeding digger returned to camp with tales of a scaled beast that had mauled three of his companions that the truth was known. Dragons are regarded as perhaps the most powerful beasts in existence. Legends say that they have consumed whole armies that have opposed them. In stories, they exist as either ravenous monsters beyond belief or bestial wizards whose strength is only matched by their intellect. That combination makes them nearly godlike in their abilities. The truth is not known, or rather it is hotly argued at the larger centers of learning, but it is likely somewhere in between the two extremes. What is known is that infant dragons, while fearsome, are not as deadly as their parents, but as they grow, so do their appetites. The diggers, after a prolonged hunt, paraded the young dragon's corpse through the street, foolishly assuming that with the child dead, they were safe. That evening, none could sleep due to the terrible wailing that came from the mountain. Parents had lost their child. The Red's fury rained upon the town at first light. Buildings were burnt to ash. Townspeople met their demise by teeth, claw, tail, and fire. Only those who managed to escape deep into the mountain survived. The Red Dragon's rage was not spent, and it flew south to further its vengeance. The surviving diggers had emptied the caves of rats, and were down to eating their own shoes for survival when the 12th Legion arrived and proclaimed the Red Beast dead. However, there was still the Black, waiting in the peak. Sheltered by rock and immovable, so the Legion quickly learned, she still had an unknown quantity of eggs, and would not abandon them. The masters of the mine deemed Coal Mountain too costly an operation. Better to leave it in ashes. Many of the diggers agreed. Others stayed out of stubbornness, greed, or ill fortune. Those that remained were the sons and daughters of those diggers, eking out a life in similar fashion to those before them. The price of coal had dropped over the decades. Most living in Coal Town could not afford to leave now, and start over unless they wanted to be little more than beggars. None truly knew if the Black Dragon still lived in the mountain's peak. Some claimed that on moonless nights a black shadow could be seen cutting its way across the sky. Legend claimed the dragon manages to eat just enough to survive and is waiting for its last egg to hatch, so together they can quit the Gray Mountain. "We should have stayed on the boat," opined Demetrius, not for the first time. The four of them looked down the steps that winded down the jagged cliffs leading to the small docks below. The coal ship they had booked passage on was riding low in the water, its hull full of black rock. Soon, it would begin its trip back to Trist, stranding the companions to their quest. "Shut up," Talbert said with a sigh. Under the circumstances, it was the best retort he could muster. Almost immediately after their boasting, the reality of what they had claimed sunk into all but Demetrius, who had decided that he had enough of one evening and collapsed deep into a drunken stupor. The remaining three managed to drag him back to their little burrow, and now sat in conference around the breakfast table. Sitting in the center of the table was the coned crimson helmet. Something about the wide, tapered point of the nose guard and the tilt of the eye slits gave it a mocking expression, as if chastising them for trying to celebrate such a trifle and meaningless non-victory over the Scarlets. "Enjoy mocking us while dying of dragon fire," was the imagined taunt from the empty helmet. "There's no way out of this, is there?" double-checked Kestra. It was stated and recognized. The only way out of completing the boast would be to renounce it, which would most likely get us exiled from the Order, answered Talbert. "I don't suppose they would be forgiving if we just failed in the attempt," asked Alexander. "Only a bit of tarnish to our reputation." "Right," Alexander said, grinning. "Then we take a boat up to Old Coal Mountain, enjoy the nightlife, admire all the pretty coal. Then we come back all, 'Woe is us, the big lizard was too clever to let go of the egg.' Take our loss of rep, but come away believed to be the only living guild to have seen a dragon. Can't lose." Talbert shook his head. "We might get away with a scheme like that if it weren't such a daft large boast. The Order Masters will be looking for any chance of a slip-up in story. I wouldn't put it past them to have other guilds act as surveyors after the fact to measure whether or not we actually made the attempt. We'd need to mock up enough evidence to make it seem we did make a legit attempt. How far do we go with that? Do we map out the actual path to the Dragon Lair? You know they'll follow up on it. Some guilds like nothing as much as shaming others. It also doesn't help that Tate had to pick some damn fool quest where an attempt almost automatically means being roasted dragon food." He scowled at the table. "I always knew that little pisser was going to get us killed." "Oh, this is all his fault, then?" asked Kestra. "Well, no, but he's the one who started," Talbert sputtered. "Yes, he was the one who started, but we continued, and all of us agreed to it. All of us. No point in placing blame or acting like we weren't just as drunk. It was a bad move, but it was a move made by all. So, if you're so sure we can't fancy our way around this, then get to work figuring out a plan to get us through this. Preferably one where we get the egg as well. You're smart enough for that, aren't you? He looked into Kestra's blue eyes, expecting to see the same fear and desperation in her eyes that he imagined was in his. Instead, he saw only determination and strength. Slowly he shook his head. Yeah, I think I can manage a plan. Together they waited for Demetrius to regain consciousness. Once he awoke and the throbbing in his head gave way enough to make sense of what they were telling him, he took the news with admirable grace. Oh, fuck, a running rabbit. I just got us all killed and eaten. We're going to be killed and eaten and spend the first 100 years of our afterlives as dragon shit. Oh, fuck, fuck, fuck me. Eventually, they managed to calm him down and convince him that they were just as guilty in entering into this venture as he was. Admittedly, it didn't take much to convince him of the latter. And, as he matter-of-factly put it, you all know I like to say stupid shit when I drink. You're not supposed to agree with me. But more importantly, he was just as resolved to facing the challenge as the rest of them. Except for every few hours when he was suggesting a new way for them to weasel out of it. But even as he was as protesting, he was putting the plans into action. So no one held his gripes against him. They found that coal ships still made weekly voyages to Coal Town, and a little coin to the captain bought them passage. Still, the lack of comfort aboard the ship combined with the rough weather meant that both Kestra, who was not fond of boats in the first place, and Demetrius, who was too fond of fire wines as a way of saying goodbye to the city he loved, spent almost as much time hanging over the side of the ship as not. Both were weakly thrilled when the ship came to dock less than 2 days after departure. It was their first full day in Coal Town. In the morning, Alec and Talbert had checked over their supplies to make sure that nothing was damaged or waterlogged, allowing Kestra and Demetrius more time to recover. The four of them stood overlooking what passed as a harbor and focused on the 5,000-meter-tall hunk of rock and snow that held their destination. "Big rock, that one," Alexander said with an awed tone. "Figure we'll start off tomorrow, then?" "More than likely the next day." Talbert had worked hard on their plan, not that there was much of a finesse to it. There were too many unknowns. "Tomorrow I want to try and talk to the locals. Maybe we can learn something that will help." All heard the doubt in his voice. It was a doubt they shared, but they would try and interview the townspeople just the same. Even when looking at the unlikelihood that they would discover anything of merit, combined with how small towns traditionally viewed nosy outsiders, the remote possibility that they could learn something about this dragon was enough to grasp at. Even the smallest of insights could make the difference between perishing and survival. "I'm not worried in the slightest." Kestra let out a laugh and smile that seemed incredulously genuine. "More like than not, the beast isn't even there. And, even if it is, what is it but an overgrown lizard, likely with a tiny brain to match? We've got a fully trained scholar from the academy. Unless all I've heard is wrong, that makes him an expert in just about everything, including dragons. Isn't that right, Tal?" "Yes," nodded Talbert. "I'm an expert."
That's all for this week. Thanks for listening. Deadly Troubadours is now available as an ebook from Smashwords.com, Amazon.com, and Apple's online store. If you want to know more about me, Brent Thomas, you can visit my website at deadlytroubadour.com. You can also like me on Facebook by searching for the page Deadly Troubadours. This podcast is available on iTunes, so if you have a moment, please rate and review the show. While you are there, why not check out my other podcasts, Comics League International and Living Japan. If you want to contact me, email me at deadlytroubadour@gmail.com or follow me on Twitter at @deadtroubadour. Once again, thanks for listening. If you are enjoying the book, please share it with your friends. And please tune in next week for the continuing adventures of the Deadly Troubadours.